Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Dear viewers, today we begin the 16th topic in this series of revisiting the collection and transmission history of the Quran. This 16th topic relates to the script of the Quran, and in particular we shall critically analyze the Muslim traditional accounts which tell us that the Quran initially, which was in its bare consonantal form, it did not have diacritics or irjam and tashkil or irab on the script, and later on these were introduced keeping in view the fact that there was a lot of tashif or misreading of the masahib. So in this topic we shall analyze the traditional accounts which tell us how our mushaf in the earliest times they were vocalized and they were diacritized. So in general what we need to know in this regard is that we are told that in traditional Muslim accounts the vocalization was introduced first in the Masahif. There was no vocalization, there were no Arab in the Masahif, and first came the Arab, and then after them, the diacritics or the nukat were introduced. And then a third phase followed, which was actually a continuation of the first one, in which the vocalization was further reformed and they were given a specific shape. So we can clearly see that there are actually three phases in which the script of the Quran had to undergo, and these are the three phases which are actually based on the Muslim accounts of the way the Quranic text, the consonantal text, was vocalized and the diacritics were introduced in that text. Now we know that the Arabic alphabet consists of 28 alphabets, but the actual graphemes which are available are just 15. And so therefore what happened was that similar words which are separated by one another through diacritics, they were given these diacritics in order to separate them from other sounds so that the 28 alphabets could be completed, which represent 28 different sounds. So let us begin with the first of these phases, which, as I said, began with the vocalization phase, in which tashkil or the Arab were introduced. Now, all of the Muslim sources are almost unanimous in the fact that they state that the person who was responsible for this vocalization was a very famous Basran poet and literary authority, and his name was Abul Asfad Zalim ibn Umar ad-Duwali. So he is the person who embraced faith when the Prophet was alive, but he did not. He was not able to see him. So he is a person who had a very long life, and it is told that he was a very close companion of Ali رضي الله عنه, and from whom he actually learned the basic rules of Arabic grammar and also formally documented them. The majority of the sources say that it was at the behest of Ziyad ibn Abi, who was the Basran governor of the Umayyad Caliph Muawiyah ibn Abi Sufyan, that Abul Asfad undertook this task. But there are other sources who say that it was actually Abdul Malik ibn Marwan, who was a later caliph, on whose behest this whole task was undertaken by Abul Aswad. Now, I'll first of all point out a very basic text in this regard, and Muhammad ibn Ubaidullah ibn Amr al-Utbi is a person who has recorded in detail this first step of vocalization, and he has given us the whole methodology as well in which Abul Aswad actually undertook, and he had vocalized the Masahif. So he writes in his famous treatise, and this is called, and actually his own book is not available. We have a citation of what he actually reported, and this citation is made by Abu Bakr ibn al-Ambari in his Izah al-Waqf al-Ibtida, which is a famous book on the script of the Quran. So the words are, these are recorded by Utbi himself. I'm going to first read out the text before you. So it says, قَالَ أُطْبِي كَتَبَ مُعَاوِيَا إِلَىٰ زِيَادٍ يَطْلُبُ عُبَيْدِ اللَّهِ إِبْنَهُ فَلَمَّا قَدِمَ عَلَيْهِ كَلَّمَهُ فَوَجَدَهُ يَلْحَنْ فَرَدَّهُ إِلَىٰ زِيَادٍ وَكَتَبَ إِلَيْهِ كِتَابٍ يَلُومُهُ فِيهِ ويقول أمسل عبيد الله يزيع فبعث زياد إلى أبي الأسود فقال له يا أبا الأسود إن هذا الحمراء قد كسرت وأفسدت من ألسن العرب فلو وزعت شيء يصلح به الناس كلامهم ويعربون به كتاب الله فأبى ذلك أبو الأسود وكره إجابة زياد إلى ما سأل فوجه زياد رجلا وقال له اقعد في طريق بالأسفد فإذا مر بك فقرأ شيء من القرآن وتعمد اللحن فيه ففعل ذلك فلما مر به أبو الأسود رفع الرجل صوته يقرأ أن الله بريء من المشركين ورسوله. So this is how the verse was read. As I'll clarify, it was actually the original verse was أن الله بريء من المشركين ورسوله, which means that God and His Prophet are they renounce the mushrikeen. However, if it is read in this way, it would mean that God renounces the mushrikeen and the Prophet himself, which is obviously a very grave thing. So it was just a change in the Arab that he took, that he made while sitting there and reading the verse aloud. So, فَاسْتَعْزَمَ ذَلِكَ أَبُوْ الْأَسْوَدُ وَقَالَ عَزَّ وَجْهُ اللَّهِ أَنْ يَبْرَى مِنْ رَسُولِهِ ثُمَّ رَجَعَ مِنْ فَوْرِهِ إِلَى زِيَادٍ فَقَالَ لَهُ يَا هَذَا قَدْ أَجَبْتُكَ إِلَى مَا سَأَلْتَ وَرَأَيْتُ أَنْ أَبْدَى بِعِرَابِ الْقُرْآنِ فَابْعَثْ إِلَيَّ بِثَلَاثِينَ رَجُلًا فَأَحْضَرَهُمْ زِيَادٌ فَاخْتَارَ مِنْهُمْ أَبُو الْأَسْوَدِ عَشَرَةً ثُمَّ لَمْ يَزَلْ يَخْتَارُهُمْ حَتَّى اخْتَارَ مِنْهُمْ رَجُلًا مِنْ عَبْدِ الْكَيْسِ فَقَالَ خُذِ الْمُصْحَفَ وَصِبْغًا يُخَالِفُ لَوْنَ الْمِدَادِ فَإِذَا فَتَحْتُ شَفَتَيَّ فَانْقُطْ وَاحِدَةً فَوْقَ الْحَرْفِ فَإِذَا زَمَمْتُهَا فَاجْعَلْ نُقْطَةً إِلَى جَانِبِ الْحَرْفِ وإذا كسرتها فاجعل نقطة في أسفله فإن اتبعت شيئا من هذه الحركات غنى فانقط نقطتين فابتدى بالمصحف حتى أتى على آخره ثم وزع المختصر المنسوب إليه بعد ذلك. So it be stated, once Muawiyah رضي الله عنه wrote a letter to his best friend governor Ziyad ibn Abi to call over his son Ubaidullah ibn Zayd to him. When the latter came over to him, he spoke to him and detected many mistakes in his language. So he actually detected him wrongly read certain words. So Muawiyah sent him back to his father. Then he wrote a letter to Ziyad, censuring him in it and said, those like Ubaidullah should be done away with. Ziyad then wrote to Abu al-Aswad and said to him, these non-Arabs have increased a lot and have spoiled the language of the Arabs. I wish you could do something through which people correct their language and correctly read the Book of God. However, Abu al-Aswad refused to do so and showed his dislike in responding to Ziyad's request. So Ziyad went to a person and asked him, sit beside Abu al-Aswad's way and read something from the Quran and intentionally make a mistake in reading it. So this is what I was referring to earlier. He actually asked that person to ring an alarm in the ears of Abu al-Aswad, and the measure he adopted was that he asked him to read a Quranic verse wrongly. So when Abu al-Aswad heard this, when Abu al-Aswad passed by that way, the person loudly read the following Quranic verse, "Anna Allaha bariyyun minal mushrikeena wa rasulihi." Of course, the original was "Anna Allaha bariyyun minal mushrikeena wa rasuluhu." So this was what the original verse was. When Abu al-Aswad heard this, he got very alarmed and said, God's countenance is more powerful than to show acquittal to his messenger. He then immediately came to Ziyad and said, I will do what you ask for and I will vocalize the Quran. So send over 30 people. Abu al-Aswad selected 10 and continued to test them until from these 10 he selected a single individual from the tribe of Abdul Qais. He asked this person, take a mushaf and some ink which should be of a different color than the script, than the color of the script. When I open my lips, write a dot on top of the letter. When I close both lips, write a dot adjacent to that letter. When I lower my lips, write a dot below that letter. If I follow up these signs with the sound of the nation, which is called ghunna in Arabic, write two dots accordingly. So Abu al-Aswad began with this task with the Mus'haf until he came to the end. Then he wrote a concise book ascribed to him on this subject. So this is how we have the report that how the Mus'haf was vocalized for the first time by Abu al-Aswad al-Dawali in the scheme that has been presented in this narrative. Now viewers, I would also like to let you know that this that besides Utbi, and this is the person whose words I have just read out to you, but besides him, this account is similarly reported by Ubaidullah ibn Ma'mar ibn Musanna, by Muhammad ibn Yazid al-Mubarrad, and with scanty details by Abul Hasan Ali ibn Muhammad ibn Abdullah al-Mada'ini. So those who have recorded Abu Ubaidah's account include Abu Sa'id al-Sayarafi in his Akhbar al-Nahwiyyin, Ibn Nadim in his Al-Fahrist, Ibn Asakar in his Tariq Medina Dimashq, Al-Zahabi in his Tariq al-Islam. Now this account says that Ziyad asked Abu al-Aswad to do something that will be a guide to people in reading the Book of God. At first he refused. However, later when he heard someone wrongly read the Surah Tawbah verse cited by Utbi, the same verse, he came over to Ziyad and asked him to make available a scribe for this purpose. A scribe from the tribe of Abdul Qais was brought, but Abu al-Aswad was not pleased with him. However, when another scribe was brought, he set out to put Nukat on the Masaif by employing the methodology of intonation described above by Utbi in the same way. So this is how we find Abu Ubaidah's account. Abu Ubaidah, Mamur ibn Musanna. So this is how this has been described in these books. Now, those who have described or recorded Mubarad's account, they include Ad-Dani in his Al-Muhkam. And the words are, when Abu al-Aswad resolved to institute Arabic grammar, he called a scribe from the tribe of Abdul Qais. And through him, he set out to put Nukat on the Masaif by employing the methodology of intonation described above by Utbi. Obviously, we have already described that. It may be noted that there is no mention of Musaf in this account. So it's not Musaf is not mentioned, but the fact is that the intonation was inserted. Now, those who record Al-Mada'ini's record, and when I said Al-Mada'ini, of course, I was referring to Abu al-Hasan Ali ibn Muhammad ibn Abdullah al-Mada'ini. So those who have recorded this include Abu al-Farj al-Asbahani, and he in his Kitab al-Aghani has actually recorded this. And as I said, it was very, very scanty details. Now this account, while omitting all of the details, says that Ziyad ordered Abu al-Aswad to put Nukat on the Masaif, which he did, and also asked him to institute the rules of grammar. So I have just summarized some of the other books before you, just to put the whole issue in perspective, that there are small discrepancies in some of the other accounts, or maybe there could be gaps which have been filled by the comprehensive account which Utbi has actually mentioned and which has been cited by Abu Bakr ibn al-Ambari. But at the same time, we need to know that there are some other details as well which have been put forth by some of the scholars. Now, Musa Shaheen Lashin attributes this whole incident to take place around 48 Hijra. And Musa Shaheen in his Al-La'ali al-Hassan, Fil Ulum al-Quran, has actually pointed this out, but he has not referred to any previous or ancient source or earlier source in this regard. He has just mentioned the date of 48 Hijra. Some secondary sources mentioned that whenever this scribe would complete one page, Abu al-Aswad would check it. So we have some secondary sources like Ibrahim Jumar's Qissa al-Kitab al-Arabiyah and Azanjani's Tariq al-Quran, which state that at the end of each page, Abu al-Aswad will check what the scribe has done, whether he has written or he has inserted the era properly or not. Now, another interesting fact reveals here is that Jirri Zaidan has mentioned seeing a Kufic Mus'haf dotted according to the scheme of Abu al-Aswad, written on this on parchment at the Darul Kutub al-Misriya, which actually found at a mosque in Cairo. And this he has written in his Tariq al-Tamadul al-Islami, his famous book, that he had actually seen this scheme of dotting as has been presented or portrayed in this narrative, as has been done by Abu al-Aswad. Now, viewers, it is also surmised by some scholars from the description of the endeavor undertaken by Abu al-Aswad that he only actually vocalized the last letters, just the last letters. As far as the other ones are concerned, we have, for example, Lashin saying that it was Abdul Malik ibn Marwan who asked his Iraqi governor, Al-Hajjaj ibn Yusuf, to stop the Sahif, which was still creeping in and people were making mistakes. So it is said that Lashin says that it is around 80 Hijra that Hajjaj summoned Nasr ibn Asim al-Laysi, who then vocalized every letter of a word so as to minimize the errors in reading them. So the point that he's making is that basically Abu al-Aswad just vocalized the last letter, and the remaining were vocalized later on by Hajjaj ibn Yusuf, who summoned Nasr ibn Asim, and this is the opinion by Musa Lashin. Now, Hifni Nasir is of the opinion that the Nukat of Abul Aswad were generally adopted in the Masaif. As far as the other books are concerned, they were rarely adopted. So this whole scheme was basically, in his opinion, something meant to rectify the reading of the Quran so that people don't make mistakes in reading the Quran. Now, he also goes on to point out some of the innovations made by the followers of Abul Aswad in adopting his methodology of Nukat. Now, some of them adopted a square shape for representing the Nukat. So instead of a dot, they had a square shape. And others adopted a hollow circular shape, and some others adopted a non-hollow circular shape. And more orthographic signs were added by the followers, by his followers, to represent the sukoon and the alif al-wasl. Now, viewers, we also have in this regard some more information. We find this, scholars engaged in discussion about the origination of this dotting scheme or this Nukat scheme. So some of them are of the opinion that that Abul Aswad was the originator of the Nukat scheme. And they are of the opinion that he was not the originator of this dotting scheme. He actually applied what he learned from the Syrians, who used them in their own language, which is, of course, Syriac. Some scholars are of the view that he was the originator of this methodology. They are of the view that he was the person who invented this methodology. And some others are of the view that he only revived this methodology, which he learned from the Arabs, which was in vogue in Arabia later. So just please make a mental note of this information, and we shall analyze it later on. But this is as far as the first vocalization phase is concerned, which, as I said, in our Muslim sources, is thought to have taken place by Abul Aswad ad-Duwali's efforts. Now, viewers, let's come to the next phase, which, as I said, is the diacritic phase. It was in this phase that the diacritic dots or the ijam were introduced so as to distinguish similar letters, like, for example, ra and za, swad and dhwad, tha and zwad, so that these letters are distinguished from one another. So as far as this phase is concerned, the first person who has recorded this whole endeavor is actually Kitab al-Tamhi al-Hudus al-Tashif, and he is the person who's called Hamza ibn Hassan al-Asbahani. So Hamza ibn Hassan al-Asbahani is the person who, in his book Kitab al-Tambi al-Hudus al-Tashif, has given these details. Now, it records the reason for the insertion of diacritics, as I said, was the fact that 40 years passed since the Usmanic Quran was written, and they were sent to various territories, and the time of Abdul Malik ibn Marwan arrived. Now, during this time, a lot of tashif, as I said, started to occur because of the similarity of words. And this worried Hajjaj ibn Yusuf. He asked his scribes to make signs which could distinguish similar letters from one another. So according to this whole proposition, it was Hajjaj ibn Yusuf who actually summoned some people to distinguish letters which were written similarly, but they were pronounced separately. Thus, for example, Al-Ba, as I said, Al-Ba, Tha, and Sa, all of them are distinguished by letters, by dots, either above or below them. And they distinguish a Ba from a Tha, and a Ba and a Tha from a Sa. So it is said that Abul Ahmad al-Askari, while referring to the same details as referred to by Hamza ibn al-Hasan al-Asbahani, he adds that as per one opinion, al-Hajjaj summoned Nasr ibn Asim al-Laisi for this purpose. So this is what actually has been written by Abu Ahmad al-Askari. So although he's referred to the same details as Hamza ibn al-Hasan al-Asbahani, but he has said that actually Hajjaj summoned Nasr ibn Asim al-Laisi for this purpose. And he writes, وَقَدْ رُوِيَ عَنَّ السَّبَبْ فِي النَّقْلِ الْمَسَائِفِ أَنَّ النَّاسِ غَبْرُوا يَقْرَعُونَ فِي مَسَائِفِ عُثْمَانِ نَيْفًا وَأَرْبَيْنَ سَنَةً إِلَىٰ أَيَّامِ عَبْدِ الْمَلِكِ ابْنِ مَرْوَانَ ثُمَّ كَسُرَ التَّصْحِيفِ وَانْتَشَرَ بِالْعِرَاقِ فَفَزِيَ الْحُجَّاجِ إِلَىٰ كُتَّابِهِ وَسَأَلَهُمْ أَنْ يَدَعُوا لِهَذِي الْحُرُوفِ الْمُشْتَبِهَ عَلَامَاتٍ فَيُقَالْ إِنَّ النَّصْرَ بْنِ عَاصِمٍ قَامَ بِذَلِكَ فَفَزَعَ لِلنَّقْطِ أَفْرَادًا وَأَزْوَاجًا وَخَالَفَ بَيْنَ أَمَاكِنِهَا بِتَوْقِيِّ بَعْضِهَا فَوْقَ الْحُرُوفِ وَبَعْضِهَا تَحْتَ الْحُرُوفِ. So it has been reported that the reason for putting dots on the Masaif was that more than 40 years had passed since the people were reading the Masaif of Usman, till the time of Abdul Malik ibn Marwan arrived. Misreading of the Masaif increased and spread to Iraq. Now, at this, Hajjaj worriedly turned to the scribes and asked them to put signs on similar letters. It is said that Nasr ibn Asim undertook this task. He instituted one and two dots and placed them variously by putting them at the top of the letters and some at the bottom. Adani has described the details of these distinguishing marks recorded on letters which resembled one another. And he has also described that. Now, scholars are of the opinion that Yahya ibn Ya'mar and Muhammad ibn Sirin were also summoned by Hajjaj ibn Yusuf. So, although this particular source which has been cited tells us that Nasr ibn Asim al-Laisi was summoned by Hajjaj, but there are other sources which tell us that Yahya ibn Ya'mar and Muhammad ibn Sirin, both of them were also summoned by Hajjaj for this very objective. And in this regard, we have the following details which have been recorded. These details have been recorded by Ibn Atiyah in what Jeffrey's Muqaddama Tafsir has been the way he has recorded. And we also find these details in Al-Qurtubi's Jami'ul Ahkam al-Qur'an. So the words are, وَأَمَّا شَكْلُ الْمُصْرَفُ وَنَقْتُهُ فَرُوَيَا أَنَّ عَبْدَ الْمَلِكِ ابْنِ مَرْوَانِ أَمْرَ بِهِ وَعَمَلَهُ فَتَجَرَّدَ لِذَلِكَ الْحَجَّاجُ بِوَاسِطٍ وَجَدَّ فِيهِ وَزَادَ تَحْزِيبَهُ وَأَمَرَ وَهُوَ وَالِي الْعِرَاقِ الْحَسَنَ وَيَحْيَى بْنُ يَعْمَرَ بِذَلِكَ. So, as far as the shakl and the nukut of the Masaif are concerned, it is reported that Abdul Malik ordered for it and had it done. He specifically deputed Al-Hajjaj for this task in the city of Al-Wasit. Al-Hajjaj expended his effort in this task and also added divisions to the Mus'haf. It was while he was the governor of Iraq that he ordered Al-Hasan al-Basri and Yahya ibn Ya'mar to do this. Now, it may be added that if Yahya ibn Ya'mar had a share in putting these diacritics with Nasr, then in the above expression, وَأَمَّا شَكْلُ الْمُصْفَ نَقْتُهُ, the word shakl and nukt must be interpreted as synonyms to mean diacritics. Otherwise, obviously, a different meaning would emerge. And the fact that they occur as synonyms is linguistically possible. Thus, for example, we find a linguist like Ibn Manzur saying, Ashkalahu Ajamahu. So, which means actually that Shakl and Naqt are the same thing. Now, whether the context permits this or not is something else, and which I shall later analyze. But as far as the second phase is concerned, viewers, this is what I have been able to find in our original sources, that it was actually at the behest of Hajjaj ibn Yusuf that these diacritics were inserted. And if we gather all the accounts, then it seems that it was Nasr ibn Asim al-Laisi, Yahya ibn Ya'mar, and Hasan al-Basri, all of whom were involved in inserting diacritics. And the reason was very simple, because similar words were getting confused and being written and read. So therefore, this is what Hajjaj came up with. Now, viewers, as you would recall, I had said that there was a third phase as well in this regard, and that was the, again, a second vocalization phase, I would call it. So there was a first vocalization phase, then we have the diacritics phase, and then we have a third vocalization phase as well, in which the original vocalization signs were actually further refined. Now, it is surmised by Muslim scholars of the Quranic orthography that the nukut of Masaif, both Tashkil and Ijam, continued in the way they were formulated in the time of Khalil ibn Ahmad al-Farahidi till his times. And we know that he was a very famous grammarian, he was a very famous philologist, and he authored the first dictionary of the Arabic language, which is called the Kitab al-Ain. And it is also said that he is the originator of the discipline of prosody, or Uruz. Now, he introduced a major change in the nukut of Tashkil, which means the Arab. So the reason for this change is pointed out by Sharshal. He says that before his times, the Mus'haf were written because they were written in a format which needed two inks. And one ink was meant for the diacritics and another ink was meant for the Arab. But as far as the diacritics were concerned, they had the same ink as the letters. But as far as the Arab were concerned, or the Tashkil was concerned, they were written by a different ink. So all of these Arab and the diacritics, since they followed a scheme of a certain dotting, the whole page would be filled with colored dots. We had black dots or red dots. The dots which actually represented diacritics were exactly the same in ink as the script. And we had the vocalization dots, or the Tashkil dots, which again were forms of dots. So what happened was that the abundance of these dots on a single page resulted in not only misreading and tasif, but also in miscommunication of the Quranic verses. So the situation could have only been resolved if one of the nukut could have been changed. obviously the nukut of the letters themselves, which are the diacritics, they could not have been changed because they formed, they were part of the, they had become part of the letters themselves. So he came up with a scheme of changing the format of the diacrit of the dots, which represented the vocalization. And Al-Khalil said is said to have changed this, these nukut of tashkil into shapes from which evolved the signs of zamma, kasra, and fatha. So it was he who came up with the scheme of changing the dots into other shapes from which ultimately zamma, kasra, and fatha are evolved. So Adani has actually recorded this. He says that قال محمد بن يزيد الشكل الذي في الكتب من عمل الخليل وهو مأخوذ من سور الحروف فالزمة واو الصغيرة السورة في أعلى الحرف لألا تلتبس بالواو المكتوبة والكسرة يا تحت الحرف والفتحة ألف مبتوحة فوق الحرف. So Muhammad ibn Yazid al-Mubarrad records the shakl found in books in the works of al-Khalil and is adapted from the depiction of the letters. So the zamma is represented in the form of a small vav above a letter so that it does not get mixed up with the actual vav written. And the kasra is in the form of a ya, and it is written below the letter, which is supposed to be the letter which it has to give the vocalization or vocal sound. And the fatha is written in the form of an alif placed horizontally above a letter. So what we have is a vav for a pesh, we have a ya for a zair, and we have a fath or a horizontal alif which represents the fath. So these are the three shapes, and it is said that these are the three shapes which actually involved in the shapes that we are used to today. So the vav remained as it is in the form of a pesh, or as it's called a zamma, and the fatha actually became a fatha, a horizontal dash. And the kasra, which was written in the form of a ya, actually evolved, and again a horizontal dash appeared, but this time below the letter. Now, scholars like Al-Ghanim Kaduri and Shashal are of the opinion that Abu Ahmad Al-Askari has actually referred to this third phase of the development of diacritics and vocalization. And this is the third phase which we are talking about. It relates to Khalil ibn Ahmad al-Farahidi's endeavor of changing the nukut of Arab. So after describing the nukut of al-Ijam carried out by Nasr ibn Asim at the behest of al-Hajjaj, here is what al-Askari writes. He says, فَغَبَرَ النَّاسِ بِذَلِكَ زَمَانًا لَا يَكْتُبُونَ إِلَّا مَنْكُوتَ فَكَانَ مَعَ إِسْتِمَالِ النَّقْءِ أَيْزًا يَقَوْ تَسْحِيفِ فَأَحْدَثُ الْإِعْجَامِ فَكَانُوا يُطْبِعُونَ النَّقْءِ بِالْإِعْجَامِ فَإِذَا أُغْفِلَ الْإِسْتِقْصَاءَ لَلْكَلِمَةِ فَلَمْ تُوفَّى كُوكُهَا اعترى هذا التصحيف فَلْتَمِسُوا حِيلَ فَلَمْ يَقْدِرُوا عَلَيْهَا إِلَّا عَلَى الْأَخْصِ مِنْ أَفْوَاهِ الرِّجَالِ. So people stuck to this method of Nasr for many years and would not write Masahif without Nukut. But even after using Nukut, misreading of the Masahif continued. So they invented Ijam and used Ijam with Nukut as well. A slight carelessness in putting all Ijam with Nukut on words again resulted in misreading of the Masahif. So this is the Ijam part which is referring to Khalil ibn Ahmad's endeavor. So people looked for a further method to secure the correct reading, even after Khalil's reform, but were not able to find one except for acquiring the Quran from the mouths of people. Now, obviously, in their opinion, the word ajam here refers to shakl, and we have already seen that linguistically shakl means ajam, and hence the reference, according to them, is to the ajam, which actually is the endeavor by Khalil ibn Ahmad. So the word ajam here, they say, is actually a reference to the shakl or the Arab, which were introduced by Khalil ibn Ahmad, which is a further reformation of the previous vocalized forms. And the word ajam, according to them, has been used or can be used in the meaning of a shakl. And since the word ajam can refer to shakl or Arab, so therefore the word ajam is here, according to them, refers to the endeavor of Khalil ibn Ahmad al-Farahidi. Now, viewers, one important thing also that I'd like to point out before I close this debate, and in the next lectures we shall, inshallah, critically view and evaluate all these three phases. Scholars have grappled with the question, since sources citing there are sources which cite conflicting reports about the person who originated the nukut on the Masahif. We have differences in here. Thus, there are some who say, there are some sources which say that the first one to put Nukat on the Masaif, on the Mus'haf, was Abul Aswad al-Duwali. Some say that it was Nasr ibn Asim, and some say that it was Yahya ibn Ya'mar al-Laysi. So this is again something which needs to be resolved, because we have find our books reporting these conflicting accounts as to who was the originator of this Nukat. Now, those who record that Abul Aswad was the person who originated the Nukat, they are, for example, Az-Zubaydi. He, in his Tabaqat al-Nahviyin, says this. Then we have Abu Hilal al-Askari, who in his Al-Kitab al-Awail says so. Then we have Ibn al-Jawzi, who in his Muntazam says so. Then we have Yaqut al-Hamawi. And Yaqut al-Hamawi has mentioned this in his Mujam al-Udaba. And then we have As-Safadi also record this, and he has recorded this in his book Wafibil Wafayat. And then we have Al-Qurtubi in his Jami' al-Ahkam al-Quran saying this, the fact that Abul Aswad was the originator of the Nukat. Then we have Qalqashandi in his Subhul Asha also recording the fact. We have Ibn Hajar recording this fact in Al-Isaba. We have Suyuti recording this fact in his Al-Bughi al-Bu'at. And we have actually Sayyid al-Mar'ashi, who has recorded this fact in his Shara Ihqaq al-Haq. So these are the people, viewers, who say that the originator of the Nukat was actually Abul Aswad al-Duwali. Now, besides them, we have other people who actually point Nasr ibn Asim al-Laysi, that he was the person who was the originator of the Nukat. So thus, for example, we have Ad-Dani saying this in his Al-Muhkam, and he ascribes this opinion to Abu Hatim Sahal ibn Muhammad ibn Usman. And then we have Ibn Atiyah saying this, and this has been recorded in his Al-Muhrar al-Wajiz. Then we have Az-Zahabi saying this in his Marifatu Qurra' al-Kibar. Then we have Muhammad ibn Yaqub al-Fayruzabadi recording the fact, and this has been recorded in his Al-Bulgha fi Tarajim A'imma al-Nahav wal-Lugha. And then we have Ibn al-Jazari saying this, and this he has recorded in his Ghayatun Nihaya fi Tabaqat al-Qurra. And then we have Al-Yaghmuri also referring to the fact that it was Nasr ibn Asim who was the originator of the Nukat, and this is recorded in his Nur al-Qabis. And again, we have another person who is Tash Kubrazada in his Masu'a Mustalahat Miftah al-Sa'ada, also referring to the fact that it was actually Nasr ibn Asim who was the originator. Now, the third, of course, is the category in which we find people attributing this origination to Yahya ibn Ya'mar al-Laysi. Now, these are the people who say this are, for example, Ibn Abi Dawud in his Kitab al-Masaif, Ad-Dani in his Al-Muhkam, Ibn Atiyah in his Al-Muhrar al-Wajiz, Al-Mizzi in his Tehzeeb al-Kamal, Ibn Asir in his Bidayah wa Nihaya. And then we have Az-Zahabi in his Siru Alam al-Nubala. We have Ibn al-Jazari in his Ghayatun Nihaya. And we have Ibn Hajar in his Tehzeeb al-Tehzeeb. Al-Yaghmuri in his Nur al-Kabis. Jamaluddin in his book Al-Nujum al-Zahira fi Muluk Misr wal-Qahira. We have Al-Suyuti recording this in his Tabqat al-Huffaz. And again we have Tash Kubrazada saying this in his Masu'a Mustalahat Miftah al-Sa'ada. So these are the people who say that the Nukat were actually originated by Yahya ibn Ya'mar. So you can see that there is a lot of debate in this regard. We have vast amounts of numerous people saying that these three were the people who were the originator of the Nukat. Now, you'll be also surprised to know that there's still another name, a fourth name in this regard, which is presented, and he is Abdullah ibn Abi Ishaq al-Hadrami, and this has been pointed out by Dani in his Muhkam, and he ascribes this opinion to Abu Hatim Sahal ibn Muhammad. So most scholars, while trying to resolve these conflicting reports, say that the nature of Nukat put by Abul Aswad and the ones put by Nasr and Yahya are different, and all three of them are pioneers in this regard. So this is how some people have tried to resolve them. So they say that Abul Aswad was the first to put the Nukat related to the Arab. So if his name is coming up as a person who was the first in this regard, so his name is actually mentioned because he was the originator of the Nukut, which related to the Arab or the declensions, while Nasr and Yahya were the person, were the people who put the Nukut related to Ajam or the diacritics. Now, this is the reconciliation which some people have made, and among them we have Ahmad ibn Malik Hammad in his Miftah al-Aman fi Rasm al-Quran. Then we have Abdul Fattah al-Qazi in his Tariq al-Musaf al-Sharif. Then we have Abdul Sabur Shaheen in his Tariq al-Quran. Then we have Dr. Ghanim Khuduri in his Rasm al-Musaf. We have Dr. al-Farmawi in his Rasm al-Musaf as well. And similarly, there are some other reconciliations as well, which some other people have tried to make. But by and large, this is the basic one which has been made, that actually all of them are pioneers, all of them are originators, but in their own fields. One of them, Abul Aswad, relates to the origination in the field of Arab, and the other two actually relate to the origination in the field of diacritics or the Ajam. So, viewers, this is a summary of the Muslim accounts in this regard that we find in our books. In the next episodes, inshallah, I shall try to evaluate all these three phases critically and see how they stand to the test of historical criticism. Till then, أقول قولي هذا واستغفر الله لي ولكم ولسائر المسلمين والمسلمات.